Jury selection begins today in the trial of two high-ranking Christie administration officials for their role in the Bridgegate scandal. Governor Christie has not been charged or implicated by authorities. He has stood by what he said the day after the story broke on January 9th, 2014.
Well, let me tell you, everybody, I was blindsided yesterday morning.
That statement, though, will be truth-tested in a federal courtroom in the coming weeks. WNYC's Matt Katz and Andrea Bernstein report.
What did Chris Christie know?
And when did he know it?
The trial of former Deputy Chief of Staff Bridget Ann Kelly and Port Authority official Bill Baroni will determine whether they will go to prison on 9 felony counts. But the central curiosity of the trial will be about Christie himself and whether he had anything to do with the cover-up. So here's what we know.
3 years ago this week, Christie attends a 9/11 ceremony at Ground Zero, on the third morning of the lane closures, with Baroni and David Wildstein, who's now pleaded guilty to federal crimes. Photographs of that day show the men laughing, talking, and checking their phones. Wildstein, who's been keeping close tabs on Fort Lee traffic, says he speaks to Christie that day about the lane closures. Christie's response, he mentions a traffic study and I'm supposed to know what he's talking about?
A few weeks later, a story appears in the Wall Street Journal, which Christie has delivered to his home. It details the fury of the New York-appointed executive director of the Port Authority, Pat Foy. The Journal reprints an email Foy sent calling the lane closures hasty, ill-advised, aberrational, and illegal.
To see this kind of language from government bureaucrats in a newspaper article is highly unusual. Christie sits down with his chief counsel, Charlie McKenna, and his chief of staff, Kevin O'Dowd. All three of them are former prosecutors. Here's O'Dowd.
A short time after that article is published, I'm present for a meeting with the governor and Charlie McKenna concerning the matter.
O'Dowd says McKenna made a couple of phone calls, heard the lanes were closed to conduct a traffic study. And O'Dowd says the inquiry ended there.
Christie is in the heat of his re-election campaign for governor, so he goes to the Bergen Record for a meeting with the editorial board to try to get its endorsement. He's asked about the unexplained traffic jams in this meeting, but he laughs it off. A couple of weeks later, he's at a gubernatorial debate, and his opponent, Barbara Buono, actually brings up the mysterious lane closures.
We have no idea why they closed, but it caused a traffic snarl up in Fort Lee, and there's an investigation, and well, lo and behold, the mayor of Fort Lee is a Democrat, and he has not endorsed the governor.
Christie just plows on, ignoring the charge. He wins re-election with a massive 60% of the vote.
The next major development comes in November, when the Port Authority's Bill Baroni, one of the officials now on trial, is called to testify before the state assembly. In secret sessions, no fewer than 4 of Christie's top aides prepare Baroni.
This week, Christie is taking over the chairmanship of the Republican Governors Association at a meeting in Arizona. His chief of staff accompanies him, and as he later tells investigators, the men discuss Baroni's upcoming testimony back in Trenton. But Baroni's testimony does not go well.
This hearing is about the lack of communication and the poor conduct of the Port Authority.
You are here trying
to cover that up.
What I would like to know is whether or not you have an email trail.
You're trying to tell us that this major, a study that had a major disruption on your major bridge has no paper trail, that there is not a single email that explains how this was done.
That defies all logic,
and nobody in this room believes that.
A week or so later, December 2nd, I'm the first reporter to publicly ask the governor if he had anything to do with closing the lanes.
I worked the cones, actually, Matt. Unbeknownst to everybody, I was actually the guy out there. I was in overalls and a hat, but I actually was the guy working the cones out there. You really are not serious.
That week, Christie spokesman Michael Druniak has a steak dinner with Wildstein, who says he got Trenton's approval for his traffic study. Here's Assemblyman John Wisniewski questioning Druniak.
So then you spoke to the governor about your dinner conversation with David Wildstein?
Yes, sir.
And did you relay to the governor David Wildstein's statement that Kelly and Stepien knew about the lane closures?
Yes.
He's referring to Bridget Kelly, now on trial, and Bill Stepien, Christie's top political aide fired in the wake of Bridgegate. Stepien wasn't charged with a crime. He is now, in fact, national field director for the Donald Trump presidential campaign.
December 9th is the day that really rings alarm bells on Bridgegate. That's the day top Port Authority officials, including Executive Director Pat Foy, say there'd been no traffic study, that the lane closures were aberrational and illegal.
Why do you think they did it?
I'm not aware of any traffic study. I don't know why it was done.
This is where Christie drops any pretense of not caring.
But I listened to most of it, and I certainly got briefed on the accounts of it afterwards.
Actually, Christie does more than listen. He's texting his incoming chief of staff, who's sitting in the hearing room. The two of them exchange 12 texts during the testimony, then later delete them all. At the hearing, Assemblyman Wisniewski announces the legislature isn't finished with its investigation.
I'd like to let you know that this committee will consider subpoenaing Mr. Wildstein and subpoenaing Mr. Barone if the investigation warrants.
That's a problem, and it sends Christie's top aides scrambling to find out what could be subpoenaed. Christie's spokesman, his top political consultant, his chief of staff, and two other aides, five people in all, tell the governor that Wildstein says there are emails that link Kelly and Stepien to the lane closures. After he hears all of this, Christie takes questions from reporters.
And I've made it very clear to everybody on my senior staff that if anyone had any knowledge about this, that they needed to come forward to me and tell me about it, and they've all assured me that they don't.
But while he's saying this, according to just-released documents, a staffer named Christina Renna texts a colleague. Are you listening? He just flat-out lied about senior staff and Stepien not being involved. Stepien was Christie's campaign manager, who was poised to run his presidential campaign. Yet, despite accusations that Stepien had knowledge of what happened, Christie says he's innocent, too.
Oh, yeah. I've spoken to Mr. Stepien, who's the person in charge of the campaign, and he has assured me the same thing.
But Christie's lying, Renna texts her colleague, if emails are found that could be bad. In the days that follow, Christie spends a lot of time on the phone with his top advisors, several of whom are in touch with Wildstein. On December 19th, Wildstein's lawyers turn over hundreds of pages of documents, including one from Kelly. Time for some traffic problems in Fort Lee.
This is what we know so far. But in recent weeks, court documents have shown that Christie did not turn over his personal cell phone to investigators. It was given to his lawyers, who then sent it to a digital forensics firm to search for relevant information. Then it disappeared for a while. He also hid a personal email account that he used to exchange at least one message about Bridgegate. This contradicts what Christie said on the presidential campaign trail.
I turned over my cell phone. I turned over my email, both professional and personal, to all of the investigators who asked for them and said, look at whatever you want to look at.
Christie could be called to testify at the trial. For WNYC, I'm Andrea Bernstein.
And I'm Matt Katz.